Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 485. Science Faction, I call BS.
I've been abused for literally hundreds of episodes, and the magic's still there, Bobby. You still got it. I still wake up every morning. I'm like, you know what? How can I be demeaned in a public forum in a science flavoring?
Oh, and then you go off on an Andy Kaufman-like bit that lasts for years where you continually lose the game over and over again and then complain about losing the game as if it could be anybody other than your own fault, the person who is selecting the answers.
I also wrestle women.
Yes. Yes, and you faked your own death and became Bill Hicks.
Shut up, Bobby.
Wait, was that it, or did Bill Hicks become Alex Jones? I forgot which one it was. One of those became one of them.
I've heard both, so from you just now.
All right, and speaking of hearing both, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Ricciardo. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
You know what? That actually explains if I am, in fact, all of those people. That explains why Alex Jones shows up on the show so much.
That's right.
So you are Alex Jones, Andy Kaufman, and Bill Hicks.
That's right. Listen, I'm not allowed to go on Twitter or YouTube anymore, so this show is actually my main way of communicating with people.
Wow, so that means that out of the three of them, you must have gotten Bill Hicks's stand-up abilities.
Correct. I'm a terror on the stage.
No, it was Alex Jones's for sure.
Let me hear your tight 15, Alex Jones.
You ever hear about the gay frogs?
I feel like his tight 15 is 3.5 hours long.
And his shirt comes off in the first 15 minutes.
They have that same warning that they do for like Shamu shows where they're like, he spits a lot, mm-hmm. So there are rags in the front.
Yeah. Holy shit, I've never seen the comedian heckle the audience.
He walked the serving staff. I've never seen that.
Boo, audience. Boo. You're the worst audience I've ever had. Boo. Tell a funny one, audience.
All right. I call BS the game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS, standing for bad science. There's only a few more of these that we are giving away free before this goes behind our stingy Patreon wall. But we will keep our regular Monday episodes coming out free for everybody. If you like I Call BS, and especially what you might want to call our what's going to be our new, more amped up I Call BS on steroids, because again,
similar to our OnlyFans account, there's
yes,
be
this is our
sexy
OnlyFans podcast. Yeah, there's a lot. It's also like a slightly bit classier. Like we make a lot of Richard jokes.
Yeah, as Bobby's spanking me with a dildo.
All right, let's get right on to I Call BS.
I called.
I called.
I called.
I called.
I called.
Ring, ring.
I called BS.
All right, article number one. A new paper suggests the discovery of a hidden form of air pollution, high amounts of semi-volatile organic compounds released by asphalt. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. It's actually, I believe, the plot to the new Fast and Furious movie.
Really? So the plot to the new Fast and the Furious movie, rip Paul Walker, is that... Asphalt gives off a lot of air pollution.
Hey, guys, we got to tell the world. We just figured out that asphalt's contributing to global warming. Let's race to the White House and tell people. Oh, no. Jason Statham's trying to stop us.
I can't wait for Fast and the Furious to get super popular. But much like they can't get Paul Walker because he's no longer around, they like can't afford their same stars anymore. So they're like, we couldn't get Ludacris, so here's... Ja Rule. Oh, wait. He was in one of the earlier Fast and Furiouses.
He was in the first one, I think.
We got the new member of the crew. Out comes Richard Simmons. Let's get him, girls.
And this is science and a pretty cool story behind its discovery. As car pollution got better and better over the last 50 years, which, by the way, is one of the untold environmental success stories in terms of pollution, is what we've done with cars over the last 50 years. Like, if you look at photos of Southern California 50 years ago versus now, it looks like 50 years ago you are looking into the dystopian wasteland of a future that's imagined in, like, post-apocalyptic novels. It's covered in smog, can't even see through the fucking air, and that's all gone now. We've greatly improved air quality because of things like catalytic converters and mufflers and more efficient engines and fuel injection and all this stuff, taking out lead out of gasoline. We have made them way, 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 way cleaner. That's awesome. But at the same time, we are also measuring a lot more. And one of the things we noticed as cars were getting cleaner, there was still this something was putting out more pollution than we had accounted for. There basically was some source of pollution that we hadn't put into the equations because things weren't balancing out. And some researchers thought to themselves, what if it's asphalt? Because asphalt heats up during the day when the sun is beating down on it. And I mean, we've all been there when somebody is like pouring fresh asphalt, like that smell is very distinct. Clearly, there's a lot of chemical compounds being released as that is drying, and likely they will be continually released to some extent for some time, especially as it's been being heated up.
Well, I mean, the FDA recommends 3 to 4 servings of tar fumes a day. So if you're not getting it from there, where do you just hang around roofers?
So they actually measured the off-gassing of asphalt, both old asphalt and new asphalt, and found a shocking amount of semi-volatile organic compounds. They calculate that the molecules released from asphalt could lead to between 1,000 and 2,500 tons of particulate air pollution. Now, guess what gas and diesel vehicles are? 900 to 1400 tons. So this would be substantially more than basically all cars. Now there's other sources of volatile organic compounds that are much higher than cars or asphalts combined, you know, things like chemical agents and stuff like that. But as far as this goes, as far as transportation goes, this might be an interesting deliberation now when we're trying to put asphalt in terms of, well, do we do asphalt or concrete? Now, concrete has its own issues. Concrete is actually one of the biggest contributors to climate change. It's a huge energy sink. It takes a lot of energy to heat up and make and use concrete.
We've mentioned that before, and I'm just curious, why is concrete so energy intensive?
So concrete has to be heated really, really hot in the batch plant. It's one of the reasons it's up until literally, I think like 8 months ago, was the first ever solar-powered concrete plant that was like a proof of concept. Because you had to get it too hot. We finally were able to do it using like artificial intelligence that are connected to those mirrors where they point all the sun's reflected energy at one little spot. We finally were able to do it with one of those. But you have to heat something up. And anytime you have to heat something up, well, fuck, that's going to take a lot of energy. Now you add to the fact that the thing you have to heat up is really thick and viscous, so it takes a lot of energy to heat it up. Then it's really heavy, so you have to move it around, which takes a lot of energy to do all that. And then you have to get it to the place, because you're not pouring it at the batch plant. You're tossing it in a truck that gets half a mile to the gallon and driving it to a place. So if you do all of those components together, concrete production accounts for like 10% of carbon emissions.
Shit. Just build them on a volcano or just use the heat from a volcano.
But it also lasts a lot longer. Like a concrete road, a good concrete road, you might have to refinish or resurface or something. But hell, I still work out here in the mountains where there's elements of Highway 80 that was put in 100 years ago. It's still just fine. I drive on it every day. It's never been redone. It's still the same road. And an asphalt road, you're lucky you have to resurface it every 5 to 10 years. Otherwise, it's going to crack and fall apart and stuff. So it might also kind of be a trade-off there. But regardless, interesting to think about that the road itself might be off-gassing not so great chemicals into the atmosphere. Article number 2, researchers using LIGO and Virgo gravitational wave detectors detected the faintest ever gravitational signal recorded, possibly made by a planetary collision, indicating the technology may be used to observe much smaller or further away events than originally thought. Damien, this is science or bad science?
This is bad science. Space is a lie.
Okay, follow-up question.
Yes, sir.
What about stars?
Stars? Well, I mean, stars come and go. Look at Kirk Douglas, Michael Douglas, Brad Pitt,
yes.
Tom Hanks.
What about other planets?
Lies of the mainstream media.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. This is bad science, Damien. They did not detect the smallest gravitational source they've ever seen. They actually saw the largest gravitational source they've ever seen. Now, to be fair, LIGO has not been operational for too long. We talked about it when it very first switched on. In fact, when they first switched on, they started seeing some gravitational waves detected. These are detecting black hole anomalies, black holes colliding to other black holes, and that's what this detection was. They think it was two black holes that form what's called a binary merger, where two of them come together and basically become one. And we think that we saw a pretty big one, the biggest one we have ever recorded. And really, really neat news, especially because if you remember, LIGO is this super, super interesting device. It basically kicked off a whole different type of astronomy that had never been done before, gravitational wave astronomy. Didn't even know if it could theoretically work, but it did. And it's these like 4 kilometer long tubes with a laser going from one end to the other. And if they get moved, you know, like a couple of atoms width left or right, it can detect that difference and then tell where that disruption and like this fabric of space-time came from as a gravity wave. And we can trace that back to black holes colliding on the other side of the fucking galaxy. It's insane.
I think that's actually why if you go to LIGO, there's a thing that says no bass solos anywhere around LIGO, because, you know, if like you have a good amp and you have somebody just tearing up a jazz bass, you're going to set off some alarms.
Yeah, Flea has been banned from the LIGO facilities.
Despite his many physics PhDs.
It was for an unrelated sex thing. All right, article number three.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't just wear a sock on your penis. You can't. I'm sorry, sir. You have to put on a lab coat and a hard hat.
And welding gloves. All right, article number three. A new paper details a 10,000-year-old archaeology site consisting of huge mammoth traps and dozens of slaughtered mammoths found during construction of an airport north of Mexico City. Do you mean this is science or bad science?
Now, the obvious answer is bad science. There is no Mexico. And so I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Follow-up question. How do you feel about New Mexico?
I'm afraid of it. All of a sudden, I want to build a wall.
But is it real? What I'm asking is, if there's no Mexico, is there a New Mexico?
You just blow my mind. You know what? I'm going to say no, but I'm going to go back and watch Breaking Bad, and we're going to see. I'm going to see how much of that's green screened.
All right, and this one is actually science, Damien. So it's a really interesting and ancient site, more accurately, multiple sites of dead mammoths, some percentage of which were definitely killed by humans and some might have been. So part of the site includes human-dug mammoth pits. They're literally digging these pits out to rush mammoths over, and they fall down and they either break a leg or they just stand over the edge of the pit and shoot fucking spears down on them until they're dead. And these date from 10 to 13,000 years ago, making them, again, some of the oldest sites. I don't want to say that saying that we don't have a lot of sites around that range, because we do, but these are the older range of sites. But in addition, nearby there's an ancient lakeshore where approximately 200 mammoths, a whole fuckload, appear to have gotten stuck in the mud on the lake's edge. That could have happened naturally because of the mud. But what could have also happened is these people who are there, obviously hunting mammoths with sophisticated mammoth traps, could use these lake beds just like mammoth traps too. Chase all the mammoths deep into the mud, they get stuck there, and you just walk up with spears and pick them off. Either way, super, super cool site, super old, very interesting too that it's near Mexico City. Those of you guys who are familiar, Mexico City is incredibly high altitude, and the fact that they're finding such early occupation so high up in that area is very, very interesting.
So they were able to train mice to scare the mammoth over the pit, like a, it'd have to be a fast mouse, like a Speedy Gonzales.
It's hard that you get all your like Paleolithic knowledge from the Flintstones. It's it becomes.
I'm gonna go shit in a pelican's mouth. I'll be right back.
Yeah. You do that again.
It's a living. Oh my god.
This is why you are banned from the SeaWorld and the zoo
and the pier.
You said I couldn't shit in that pelican's mouth, not any pelican's mouth.
Okay, last week that was a seagull. Completely different.
Oh, dear. And lastly, article number four. A new paper suggests that bee venom can kill cancer cells while leaving normal cells intact. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, and I don't care how many times the doctor have told me that this is the only way to cure my colon cancer. I am terrified of that beehive he's going to put in my butt.
Yeah, first of all, it's not a doctor. It's an S&M dominatrix. And number two, it is a very specific one that only uses bees.
Also, those are hornets.
Just, I imagine like a cat of nine tails, but each one of the little leather straps is tied to a bee.
She's wearing a sexy bee costume.
Constantly playing the song No Rain by Blind Melon.
This isn't all that. Oh my god!
Eating honeycombs.
This is the worst doctor's office / bee themed dominatrix.
She just has pictures of dead Macaulay Culkin all around her.
An early client.
The idea of a bee themed dominatrix is my new favorite thing.
No es bueno.
Oh, dear. Damien, this one is indeed science. Though I do want to say that one of my pet peeves is to just refer to something working against quote-unquote cancer. broadly as opposed to the specific kind, because it's kind of like saying something works against diseases. So I did want to clarify that. I didn't want to be too specific because I thought it would give it away as being true to Damien, but this is a very specific type of breast cancer. It's one that can sometimes be difficult to treat with chemo alone, but mouse models show that a component of bee venom, a chemical called melittin, helps shrink those tumors. And then in this particular test, they combined it with chemo and they had shocking results. Those that were previously somewhat chemo resistant seemed to show positive results almost immediately, and those who had previously shown positive results with just chemo seemed to show enhanced or advanced results with the melittin enhanced chemotherapy. Very, very cool. It'd be neat to see exactly how effective this is. We have to quantify it through phase two, phase three trials, all that kind of stuff. But very, very cool. Anytime we figure out something that can work on this. And even though, like I said before, one specific type of cancer, don't think this is all types, we might later find that it also works on specific other types of cancer. Very, very cool news.
This reminds me of another comedian in town. He has a joke about natural male enhancement, and it's basically just letting bees go to town on your dick.
That would work. I mean, in a lot of ways. Again, unless you had the whole Macaulay Culkin bee allergy thing, in which case...
Maybe that was his thing. You know, he was Icarus, flying too close to the sun. He knew what he wanted.
You know what none of us considered? Maybe Macaulay Culkin's character in the movie My Girl was super into autoerotic asphyxiation and he really just wanted to get one good one off as he was going out.
Yeah, a lot of people use like a tie and a coat rack. No, anaphylaxis is the...
He uses bees! It gives you a shorter window of error, but man, does it give you a reward.
You just have to be ready with that EpiPen.
How many young men have to die with their dick in one hand and an EpiPen in the other before we solve this epidemic of autoerotic asphyxiation by bee?
By the way, on last episode, you mentioned being stung by bees while on an archaeological dig.
Yeah.
How difficult is it, would you estimate, to maintain an erection while under attack by bees?
I mean, listen, if that's what you're into, though, like...
Unless the bees are stinging you in the erection, thereby locking in the swelling, there is...
Yeah, okay. You're right. You're actually bringing up a really good point now. So here's what I'm imagining. You know those, like, outdoor picnic fly nets, pop-up yes. fly nets that you can put over a dish of food?
Yes.
So you're jerking off with one of those over, like, the center part of your torso, right? And the bees are all on your chest and your arms and your shoulders and your legs, so they don't have access to the genital parts.
I was just going to stick my dick through a hive, you know,
just
crush it like a bear's nose.
Like the raciest book of Winnie the Pooh? That's why he doesn't wear pants.
Or an American Pie reference, and like I'm going to... pretend that honeycomb's a pie.
Oh, dear. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 485, where you learned all about how asphalt might be making a lot of air pollution, how LIGO detected the strongest source of gravitational waves that we've ever seen, how we found a really cool 10 to 13,000-year-old mammoth archaeological site near Mexico City, and how we found out that bee venom can kill specific types of cancer. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 486.
Pediatricians around the country have new recommendations. Bees for cancer. Rattlesnakes for colic.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.